නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Actually, these days we are discussing Dvaitanupassana Sutta. We can literally translate it as contemplation of dyads, kind of couples, how things are arranged. So this is interesting one where Buddha delivered this discourse while he was in Migara Madhupasada. You know that this was built by Vishakha, and she actually has become a kind of a guidance to her uncle, and he, the Migara, this Migara wants to sort of respect her, and that's why she being known as Migara's mother. Actually, Migara's son is the Vishakha's husband. Anyway, this uncle, who was a kind of person who has gone to the wrong side or into wrong views, and but anyway, with the guidance of Vishakha, he has become a follower of the Buddha, and then he was really honoring Vishakha, and the mansion or the monastery built by Vishakha is called Migara Madhupasada. And during that time, Buddha was dwelling there, and this is a full moon Poya day. And at that day, Buddha was living with the monks, and all were very much like came out, and they were at night just sitting quietly in an open surrounding. So it's interesting that how they are well connected with the nature and enjoying that beauty of the sun, of the moonlight, and how the environment is very beautiful. So all are, by the way, meditating, and Buddha saw that how monks are really quiet and they are diligent. So at that occasion, Buddha wants to deliver this discourse. Some similar incident happened when we can discuss about the Anapanasati Sutta. The situation is very much similar. Buddha was dwelling it in Migara Madhupasada, Visakha's mansion, or the Migara mother's mansion. And at that time also monks were quite really quiet, and they are diligent in their practice. And by seeing that sight, Buddha was motivated, and he basically delivered Anapanasati Sutta. Actually, he went through a couple of other occasions, like he postponed his traveling because in order to support the monk's practice, and another month he was there, and again next month he delivered Anapanasati Sutta. So likewise, it represents how beautifully monks and the Buddha are really dwelling in accordance with the nature, and again how seeing the monk's diligence, how Buddha is tempted to deliver a very beautiful or very profound sutta. Now the idea in this sutta is that Buddha is asking a question from the monks. In case someone is asking you, what is the aim of your practice? What is the aim of your listening to this wholesome Dhamma, the noble Dhamma? And you should answer like this: for the accurate knowledge of things arranged in dyads. So there are things that we need to understand, teachings that we need to understand. So now Buddha have arranged that in dyads, like couples, two sides. So we can see the arrangement in this sutta very much like arrange one side as the mundane worldly side and the other side as the supramundane side. Mundane side is where we are working with, and as a result of our practice we are doing, being in the mundane side ultimately take us closer to the supramundane side, or we completely dwell upon in the supramundane side. So the first side is very much the activity or the practice that we need to conduct in the mundane side, and as a result of that practice we are going to establish ourselves in the supramundane side. So one can say therefore this dyad is always very much the first side, the first contemplation is fairly in the mundane side. As a result of that proper contemplation, one would be able to establish oneself in the supramundane side. So Buddha takes the first topic as the Four Noble Truths. So there are, Buddha has arranged two truths, the first truth and the second truth, the truth of suffering, the truth of cause of suffering, as the mundane side, where we have to recognize the truth of suffering, fully understand, comprehend the truth of suffering. As a result of that, we may be able to abandon craving, that is the cause of suffering. And ultimate result is that we start dwelling in the third noble truth, that is the Nirodha Satya. And this whole development, whole practice is called the Magga Satya, the development of the path. And second, we discuss about the other topic Buddha is talking, that is regarding the acquisitions, what we call as the upadhis. So this is what actually we are using to build a self. So we are thinking that there is an ongoing existing self inherent into our body or to our mind, and we think that is our soul, that is our self, and we want to maintain that self, we want to highlight our ego, and for that we are using so many different things. It may be our acquired wealth, it may be our children, it may be our mother, father, our education, our skills, or maybe our beauty, maybe our strength. So likewise, there are so many things available, and we are ignorantly attaching to them, ignorantly holding them, and trying to use them so that our ego is highlighted. Kind of self-personification has highlighted, so self is built, and now we feel that I am living, I am available, I am established. I am so and so, I am a wealthy person, I am an educated person, I am a strong person, I am a beautiful person. So likewise, we create a self out of whatever these things, and it could be material things or it could be immaterial things. Anyway, by using them, so we are creating a self. So with respect to acquisitions, Buddha tell, whatever suffering originates is all conditioned by acquisition. So that is one side. So we create self, ultimately that illusionary self is going to be sort of subjected to various consequences, and ultimately we suffer. Because what we have made is not a real self, but it's a mind-made, ignorantly made self. So understanding that whatever suffering going to be prepared, cost is because of these acquisitions, one may tempted to abandon those acquisitions, and once we are able to abandon them, so remainderless fading away and cessation of acquisitions, then Buddha mentioned there is no origination of suffering. So these are the two sides mentioned in the second contemplation. So the first contemplation is talking about the availability, maybe our grasping into whatever the acquisitions. And once we realize that, there is a possibility that we can abandon them. And then we are able to realize the non-self, natta. As a result of that, the mind is released. We are back in the supramundane side. So this is another way of looking at these dyads, the two sides. And now we can discuss about the third theme. So that is called the ignorance, avijja. So as you know, there are roots or causes of suffering. Sometimes Buddha tell one cause as the suffering is what we call tanha, craving. That is the theme of the second noble truth, where we say dukkha samudayang ariya satchang. So that is the tanha, craving. But with tanha, actually one accompanying quality is what we call the avijja, the ignorance. Tanha and avijja are very much like going together. Sometimes Buddha tell, okay, tanha is the reason. Sometimes Buddha say ignorance is the reason. But they are very much like interconnected. Once we have fair amount of ignorance, it is quite easily we get attached to something because we don't know their true nature, their reality. So as a result of that, we get attached. So attachment and ignorance are fairly coupled together. So interesting thing is, if we are able to recognize the true nature, the reality, then that is the knowledge. So that knowledge helps us to release from the attachment, or to give up things, or to let go of things. So then we are able to release the mind, free the mind. So in this second contemplation, or rather third contemplation, Buddha therefore mentioned, so if someone is asking, is there any other aim of your practice? Is there any other aim of your listening to Dhamma? And is there any other duet, a dyad is available? Then Buddha say, yes, you need to say yes. So what is that? Yankichi dukkhaṁ sambhoti sabbhaṁ avijjā pachyāti ayaṁ ekānu passana. So whatever suffering arises, so it is because of this avijjā, ignorance. Whatever suffering originates is all conditioned by ignorance. So ignorance is one conditioning factor, one cause. Avijjāyattyeva asesa virāga nirodha natti dukkhasya sambhavoti ayaṁ dutiyānu passana. So if we are able to abandon or fade away ignorance, if we are able to establish ourselves in such a situation where there is no ignorance, so then there is no origination of suffering. Because the cause is completely abandoned, the root is completely abandoned. So that is what we call as the second side, or the second contemplation. That is where we are now dwelling in the Nirodha Sacca. Or we can say we are now in the Nibbana. So one has attained Nibbana. Now, if one is able to do this successfully, so Buddha's prediction is that one can become either completely liberated, one can become an arahant, or one can become an unreturner. So these are the really noble benefits that if we are able to properly do this. So before getting to some details, so let's see what is avijja. So directly, so this question being asked from the Buddha, from Venerable Sariputta, so this is a very common question discussed in various suttas. So there is one sutta called Avijja Sutta with the name in the Samyutta Nikaya, particularly in the Kanda Samyutta. So one monk is asking, avijja avijjati bhante bucchati kittavatanukho bhante avijja kittavatacha avijja gato hoti. Venerable sir, there is something called ignorance. Ignorance, what is ignorance? And how we can say someone is immersed in ignorance? So there Buddha giving answer with respect to the aggregates. Idabhikkhu asutava putujjano rupang nappajanati. Rupa samudayang nappajanati. Rupa nirodhang nappajanati. Rupa nirodhagamini patipadang nappajanati. So similarly, he explained about Vedana, Sanya, Sankara and Vinyana. Here, Bhikkhu, the uninstructed worldling does not understand form, its origin, its cessation, and the way leading to its cessation. He does not understand feeling, perception, volitional formations, consciousness, that origin, how it is originating, what are the causes, how currently in the present moment, how it is arising. So he doesn't have such understanding. He haven't used his direct knowledge to understand that. Probably he might have heard about it, but here we are talking about the direct knowledge, some experiential knowledge. It is not mere theoretical understanding. So it's a kind of a penetrative knowledge is required. But here this person who haven't have any kind of understanding, he is not heard of the Dhamma. He don't understand the first noble truth, or here we can simply say the five aggregates. You know, we have discussed when we were discussing four truths, four noble truths, that the Dukkhaṁ Ariya Satchaṁ is nothing but the five grasping groups, five grasping aggregates. Rupa aggregate, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vinyana. So if we don't have thorough understanding about these five aggregates, we can say we are ignorant. And again, we can say we are not knowing the First Noble Truth. On the other hand, if we are able to understand five aggregates thoroughly, how they are being conditioned, how they are originating, how they are changing, how they are disappearing. So that means we are very much like dealt with it, dealt with that subject, and we were able to understand that properly, practically. So we have worked on it. So that is the whole purpose of Satipatthana. So while we are dealing with Kayanupassana, so we are thoroughly trying to understand experientially, practically about the form aggregate. When we are dealing with Vedanupassana, we are trying to thoroughly understand about the feelings. When we are dealing with Chittanupassana, when we are practicing Chittanupassana, so we are exploring the passage of the mind. So how various perceptions are arising, how various thought formations are happening, and how consciousness is operating. So it's a kind of a thorough understanding about the mental side. So that is where we get a thorough understanding about those aggregates. And when we start practicing Dhammanupassana, we get an opportunity to understand all the five aggregates. Not only the mind side, even the form side, the rupa side, is also able to understand. So that means a comprehensive understanding of the five grasping groups is happening when we are practicing Satipatthana. But here the point Buddha highlights is that this person haven't have such kind of an opportunity, so he is ignorant. So that is how he has no idea about the rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, vijnana, the five aggregates. So he is an ignorant person. And some other occasion, Venerable Kottita is asking from Venerable Sariputta. So that is in the Avijja Panha Sutta, again in the Sanghita Nikaya. Avijja avijjati avuso Sariputta vuchati. Katamanukho avuso avijjati. So he is asking avijja avijja. Ignorance, ignorance is said. So what is ignorance? And Venerable Sariputta directly answer with respect to the Four Noble Truths. Yanko avuso dukkhe anyanam, dukkha samudaye anyanam, dukkha nirodhe anyanam, dukkha nirodha gaminiya patipadaya anyanam. Ayam uchati avuso avijjati. So very much like the same thing, but with different terms. So previously Buddha was talking directly about the five grasping groups. Now here Venerable Sariputta is answering with respect to the Four Noble Truths. So they are very connected. So as I mentioned, when we are thoroughly understanding the five grasping groups, we are working on the First Noble Truth. So when we are start working with that, we are slowly abandoning the Second Noble Truth, that is the function expected. Dukkha samudayang ariya satchang pahatabbang. So there we are abandoning, we are understanding the cause of suffering and we know how to work on it. So that is to abandon it. So we are working on the Second Noble Truth. As a result of that, now one realizes Nibbana to some extent. It may not be the full-fledged, complete, perfect Nibbana. But relatively now mind is relaxed, not burning with lust, not burning with anger, not under the subject of ignorance, somewhat free from ignorance. So now the mind is cooled. Now the mind is released from grasping, released from suffering, released from tension, stress. So comparatively, you are experiencing some kind of peace, very much like closer to Nibbana. Relatively, you are free now. So third noble truth. So this whole practice is the fourth noble truth, the development of the path. So the Venerable Sariputta's answer and the Buddha's answers are very similar, but using different terminology. And here Venerable Sariputta directly answers, so avijja means that you don't know about the four noble truths. It is not mere knowing of the names, rather you need to know about the First Noble Truth in practical sense. Then we need to work on the Second Noble Truth, how to abandon the cause of suffering. And we need to realize the Nibbana, comparatively whether the mind is released, whether the mind is relaxed, whether the mind is peaceful. So that is something that we need to experience. So experientially we need to know whether you are now residing, you are now dwelling in that peaceful state. Previously the mind was burning, there was suffering, and you are able to recognize its cause, now that cause is abandoned, so the mind become calm, relaxed, peaceful. So now you can experience, you need to experience. So that is the third noble truth. And this whole practice is the fourth noble truth, the development of the path. So there are various other suttas monks are asking, so how to abandon suffering, rather how to abandon ignorance. Avijja patama avijja pahana sutta, again in Sanyutta Nikaya. Katam pana bhante janato katam pasato bhikkhuno avijja pahiyati vijja uppajjati. So how one has to practice in order to abandon ignorance and to develop the knowledge, to arise the knowledge. And there Buddha answer telling about the impermanence. Chakkunko avaso anicchato janato pasato bhikkhuno avijja pahiyati vijja uppajjati. So he say here you need to know how I is arising and how I is passing away and how it's impermanent. And similarly he say various forms, how they are arising, how they are passing away, how they are impermanent, you need to know. And how the contact happen at the eye, how it is arising, how it is passing away, how it is impermanent. And then if there is any kind of a feeling arising as a result of that contact, we need to know and how it is arising, passing away, changing. So if we have that practical understanding, you have experienced that, if we have that such a knowledge, then Buddha say, avijja pahiyati vijja uppajjati. So similarly, other faculties are also mentioned, the ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. So here the answer is given with respect to the faculties. These are different way of practices. One can look at the body and give more prominence later to the mental aggregates, that is with respect to the aggregates. So one can become, or one can practice giving more emphasis on the senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. And there we can see how things are arising and passing away. That's another way of practice, ayatana, ayatana bhavana. So another practice. So anyway, the understanding is that how impermanent this experience is. How quickly the eye form, ear, sound, nose, smells, tongue, tastes, body, tangibles and the mind and the mental objects are arising and passing away. So that help us to understand they are fleeting nature, arising and passing away nature, they are inconstant nature. So as a result of that, now your understanding is developing. You know things as they truly are. So the knowledge has arisen. The knowledge is helpful to abandon or dispel ignorance. So we are talking about how to abandon ignorance. So we are ignorant because we don't know really. We may heard about things, we have some superstitional knowledge, theoretical knowledge, but here we are talking about the real experiential knowledge. So you first may have to develop mindfulness, and as you develop mindfulness, mind starts concentrated. And once that concentration is available, again and again you need to recognize various bodily phenomena, various feelings, perceptions, mental formations, volitions, all that, and as a result of that you are able to understand their true nature. How quickly they are arising, how quickly they are passing away, how vulnerable they are, how conditioned they are. So all these are very much the understanding we are developing. So that knowledge, experientially what we have gained, helps to dispel ignorance. So this is the method that Buddha recommend here. And there are various other suttas where Buddha mentioned about other methods. Katamo panabhante eko dhammo yassa pahana bhikkhuno avijja pahiyati vijja uppajjati. This is another interesting sutta, Duti avijja pahana sutta in the Sanghita Nikaya. So one monk is asking, I have heard that Buddha is talking, that is one factor we need to abandon in order to abandon ignorance. So what is that factor? And Buddha says that is the avijja. So he's asking, I have heard that there is avijja we need to abandon, and there is one factor in order to abandon that. So what is that one factor? So Buddha said it is the avijja. So that means there is no further, but you need to abandon avijja in order to abandon avijja. Something like kind of a contradicting statement. So the point is, avijja is very much like the cause, very much like the root. So the root has to be abolished. So there are methods available, by the way. And there are nutriments causing avijja, so that we learn soon. So avijja is very much the root cause. So that root cause has to be abandoned. So that is the emphasis mentioned here. And so here actually the explanation or the method is explained with respect to grasping. Idha bhikkhu bhikkhuno sutang hoti sabbe dhamma nalang abhinivesayati. Now here, so Buddha highlights that he has heard everything has to be abandoned. Nothing is suitable of grasping. So this is a kind of a theoretical understanding, but now he is working on it. As much as possible, he is not grasping anything. Basically, the letting go process has started in him because he has seen the truth. So, Bedamma nalang abhinivesaya. So, this is a very interesting motto if a practitioner can maintain sabbe dhamma nalang abhinivesayati. So everything has to be abandoned. So typically our motivation is that we need to grasp things, we need to own things, we need to possess things, we need to accumulate things. But ultimately we have to abandon everything. So in the typical terminology, we can say when during our death, we can't carry anything with us. We may have our children, we have our wealth, we may have our designation, we have our reputation. So many things may be we own. We may have our car, our position, our social status, our name, this and that. But at the death, nothing we can carry. So we are ignorantly accumulating so many things. We identify with them. Those are the acquisitions. But unfortunately, at the death, nothing can be taken with us. So everything has to be abandoned, relinquished. So this is something, a bitter truth. So if one is able to understand that, so he is not that quarreling with the others in order to acquire things. Because, you know, I mean, even though I acquire things, I have to abandon them. Not strongly grasping things because he know that is causing suffering. So, sabbe dhamma nalang abhinivesayati. So, whatever the life presents to me, ultimately I have to abandon. So, this is something as a bitter truth one is keeping in one's mind. So, slowly he start abandoning things. And he understand all these rupa, all these feelings, perceptions, formations, consciousness, all that are very much dependent on so many other causes. So basically, they are non-self. So here the theme is very much related to the non-self. Sabbe dhamma nalang abhinivesayati, so sabbang dhammang abhijanati, sabbang dhammang abhinyaya, sabbang dhammang parijanam. So he is thoroughly studying these things. He is practicing. As a result of that, he directly knows them. Abhijanati means directly knowing things. So directly he knows things. So he practices Satipatthana. He has the mindfulness. He has concentration. He has seen things as they truly are. Through his penetrative knowledge, that is an experiential knowledge, direct knowledge, not merely by the books. And once he directly know that, so he has a thorough understanding, the parijanati. And once he thoroughly understand, so he know they are non-self. Anyato pasati. So Anyato explanation is given by Bhikkhu Bodhi and the commentary also as non-self. So he understands the non-self. Actually, in a way, we can say this is very much the same thing. But his understanding is more inclined towards the non-self feature. Say you are practicing Kayanupassana, maybe elements meditation. And as you practice elements meditation, so you understand they are merely elements. So they don't belong to you. They don't belong to someone else. They have their various causes and conditions. And accordingly, they are changing. So you have very less control. So more and more you practice elements meditation, probably your mind is understanding the non-self feature, non-self characteristic. So once the non-self characteristic is such highlighted, so you start abandoning things, you know that these things are not mine. These things are not under my control. So as a result of that, so the abandoning process is started, letting go process started, so mind get released. And we can say you have arrived the sunyata, the state of the emptiness, because thoroughly your understanding is based on the non-self, anatta. Now this is another practice. But the very much similar, someone may understand the impermanent characteristic, someone may understand the suffering characteristic, another one may understand the non-self characteristic, and basically everyone may understand everything, all these three characteristics to some extent. But one may is prominent in non-self, one may be prominent in suffering, one may be prominent in the impermanence. Now here Buddha's answer is very much highlighting about the non-self. So if one is able to understand this non-self, so that means he is seeing things differently, see as non-self, and as a result of that his ignorance is abandoned, and what we call the knowledge has arisen. Now, what are the causes of avijja, or what are the reasons for avijja to develop? What are the nutriments? So this is a very interesting and very important subject where Buddha explained avijja is also kind of nurtured by various nutriments. So what are those nutriments? And here Buddha starts with the asappurisa sansevo. So if one starts associating wrong people, bad association, so the result is that you may start hearing bad things, wrong dhamma. Instead of true dhamma, you start hearing wrong dhamma. Asad dhamma savanam paripureti. Asad dhamma savanam, not the sad dhamma savanam, but you may have to listen to is the asad dhamma, the wrong dhamma. And ultimately, you reduce your faith, assume that you had some amount of faith, but now even you lose that faith. Now your faith is established on something wrong, erroneous. And the other thing is, once your understanding is established on erroneous things, so you have a careless attention, not the wise attention, but kind of a careless attention, wrong attention. You may be superficially keeping your attention. And once you have such wrong attention, what we call as ayoniso manasikara, probably you start thinking, oh, there is I existing, so I am here, I am so and so. So as a result of that, you start kind of thinking, overthinking, proliferating, either with respect to the past, with respect to the future, with respect to the present. So likewise, huge amount of proliferation is now going on. You start a thinker. You can be an obsessive thinker. You may be overthinking. Ayoniso manasikara is there. So now you have no mindfulness. There is no clear comprehension. So the defilements are leading you now. Defilements are very much torturing you now. So this is where the other side of the coin, where now we are trapped. And this leads to non-restraint. Indriya asangvara. This leads to non-restraint. As a result of that, now you start doing various notorious things, maybe bodily misconduct, verbal misconduct, and the, say, mental misconduct. And ultimately, the hindrances are growing. And so that is the ignorance, ultimately. So all these factors are actually contributing to develop ignorance, avijja. And then Buddha discusses about the other side. So how you are developing the knowledge, the true knowledge and liberation, that is complete opposite of avijja. So the complete opposite of avijja is called vijja and vimutti, true knowledge and the liberation. So what is the causes of that? So there Buddha mentioned sappurisa sanseva. Starts with the sappurisa sanseva, that you are associating good friends. Now this is fairly prominent in the old society, in the old India. There is, at that time there are no computers, no internet, no books, or any other kind of such material. You have to go to the person, you have to reach the teacher, you have to associate him. Then the teacher will tell you or teach you, so what is the truth. So that association is very much the crucial way of learning. But nowadays we have many methods. We have books, we have internet, we have libraries, we can participate into discussions, Zoom meetings, so many things are there anyway. That's a good sign. So that also become helpful means for us to understand the Dhamma. So that is very much like we are associating a good friend, because we can hear the Dhamma with various ways. So that is the, in a way, advantage of this era. It's not that sometimes we have to go and associate that person in person and then after some time he is teaching, but rather now the teachings are available in the books. You can go to a library, you can purchase a book, you can start reading that, studying that, practicing that. So that opportunity is there today. That's in a way a fortunate thing. So anyway, when you are associating a good person, so he start teaching you, he start telling you something good, and you start hearing the good Dhamma. Saddhamma savanam paripureti. And once you start hearing true Dhamma, you start now some amount of faith. It may be true, he may be telling the truth. I better practice. I better further look into Dhamma. I need to associate further the good friends. So likewise, you get some kind of a confidence, you get some kind of a faith, and you start practicing Dhamma. So now you start Yoniso Manasikara. Rather than simply dwelling in the superficial way and grasping things as me, myself, etc., you start looking from a different angle. Saddhamma savanam paripuram paripureti saddhamma. Saddham paripureti. Saddham savanam paripuram, saddham paripureti. Saddha paripura, yoniso manasikaram paripureti. Now the yoniso manasikara is in effect. You start looking things differently. And as a result of that, Buddha say mindfulness and careful attention is now developing. So you start developing mindfulness. So that's a kind of a turning point in our life. So we start practicing mindfulness. We are rather than ignorantly allowing defilements to take us for a ride, so we start establishing mindfulness. So while you are brushing teeth, okay, you are aware of the brushing teeth. While you are walking, you are fully aware of walking. While you are sitting, you are fully aware of sitting. While you are, say, sleeping, you are fully aware of sleeping. So likewise, now you are kind of using mindfulness as a companion. You are not ignorantly driven by defilements, restlessness, or careless attention. Rather, you start your own kind of a practice now. You start living now. So that we need to feel. Say you were not practicing at all. Now once you decided, okay, I need to practice mindfulness. So you have a kind of responsibility. as much as possible to establish mindfulness. So that is very, very essential. How to establish mindfulness? While breathing, say you are trying to establish mindfulness. Maybe rising and falling happens, you are trying to establish mindfulness. Maybe walking happens, so you are trying to establish mindfulness. So this is a kind of a turning point in our life. So we start practically involved in the development of these qualities. So the mindfulness is now available, and as a result of that, after some time, you start feeling some amount of concentration. So mind is not getting distracted often, rather mind gets collected. And you can maintain your attention on a particular subject for a long time now. Previously mind gets scattered, previously mind easily gets distracted. But now you have the capacity to maintain your attention for a long time. So you are developing that concentration power. So once that is developed, now you need to start investigation. How things are truly happening. So you need to see these subtle phenomena, how they are true nature. Say you are keeping your attention to the body. So various bodily sensations are there. How they are rising and passing away. You need to experience, we need to observe. So there are various element characteristics, hardness, softness, heaviness, lightness, gross, smooth, so that we need to experience how they are changing, and maybe the heat, cold, we need to see how they are changing, and we need to see how various movements, vibrations are happening, how they are changing, arising and passing away, how kind of a fluidity is operating, so how it is arising and passing away. So you are doing a very thorough investigation. For that, actually, we need a very fairly concentrated mind. So that mind, concentrated mind, help us to understand their true nature. It is not that we make things impermanent, rather they show their true nature, so that is impermanent. So they are conditioned, so all these conditioned phenomena are subjected to impermanent, so they start showing that, so we start observing that directly through that concentrated mind. So as a result of that, so actually I came a little far here. When mindfulness and clear comprehension develops, you start little concern about your bodily activities. You are not immediately jumping into activities, impulsively reacting, so you become little restrained. As a result of that, you start restraining your sense faculties. So that means you are careful about what you do. That means you are practicing sila, morality. You are trying to restrain your bodily conduct. You are trying to restrain your verbal conduct and the mental conduct. So that means the four establishment of mindfulness. So here a very interesting flow Buddha mentioned, how starting with associating good friends, you start hearing good dhamma, establishing faith, then you start yoniso manasikara, careful attention, now you start practicing mindfulness, then you couple it with clear comprehension. So as a result of that, now restraint in the sense faculties are happening, so you are somewhat careful of your activities now, and now you establish mindfulness. So once a mindfulness is established, each mindfulness practice actually contributes to develop seven enlightenment factors. You can refer Anapanasati Sutta, where Buddha very beautifully explained, a detailed explanation is given how Kayanupassana helps to develop seven enlightenment factors, how Vedananupassana helps to develop seven enlightenment factors, how Chittanupassana helps to develop seven enlightenment factors, how Dhammanupassana helps to develop seven enlightenment factors. So there are, if you can remember, 16 steps are explained, and among the 16 steps, first four steps are developing Kayanupassana, and it contributes to develop seven enlightenment factors. Second four steps are helping to develop Vedananupassana, it is also developing seven enlightenment factors. So likewise, so the four establishment of mindfulness, four satipatthanas, are helping to develop seven enlightenment factors. Now once that is fairly developed, so your mind get temporarily liberated. So you experience some amount of peacefulness, non-grasping state, unassociated state. So that's a temporary kind of a nibbana, padanga nibbuti. Because you have some understanding, certain amount of insights are available. So that insights are helpful for the mind to refrain from grasping. Keeping the mind relinquished, keeping the mind released, keeping the mind freed. But that has to be further consolidated, otherwise you can't maintain that. So now you are further practicing seven enlightenment factors. So ultimately you are further and further maintaining that freedom, so that your knowledge is very much consistent, knowledge is fairly available, fairly strong. So that knowledge is very much like an inherent quality to the mind now, so that your experience of freedom is fairly available. So here in this sutta, actually Buddha talks about the contributing factors towards the avijja, the ignorance, and on the other hand he is explaining about the contributing factors towards the knowledge and the freedom. So I'll use one last statement here on the Parissamuppada, where we all know that the ignorance is in this usual or the very famous statement, avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana, vijnana paccaya nama rupan. So likewise Buddha explained how the process is conditionally driven. When ignorance is predominant in one's mind, so it makes a lot of fabrications. With too much talking, too much thinking, too much activities, lot of operations going on in the mind, and mind is continuously doing lot of fabrications, lot of manipulations, lot of preparations in the mind. And it leads to the consciousness to establish, get entangled in the name and form, and now it promotes various bodily activities, maybe seeing, hearing, thinking, going through various sense contact. All the five senses are in activity, so that causes contact, and that contact generates feelings, and we start grasping those feelings, and actually we start craving those feelings, and ultimately we grasp those feelings, and ultimately we become something, ultimately we become someone. Now the completely lost mindfulness, we completely lost our kind of freedom. Now we are in a mentally prepared world, a conditioned state. So that conditioned state is impermanent. Ultimately we lose it, collapse it, and we are suffering. Because it's a mind-made one, it's an illusory state. But we can't maintain it, so ultimately we suffer. So the root is somewhat Buddha given as the avijja. So this is a very interesting area with respect to dependent origination. Also avijja is discussed. And if one is able to abandon avijja, instead of avijja, if one has knowledge, if one has true knowledge, so that is operating in the mind, so it prevents fabrications, it stops fabrications, minimizes fabrications. So you start, calming down, relaxing, less inner chatter, less fabrications, less proliferation. So the mind does not entangle now. The consciousness does not entangle with the name and form. You may have a kind of a clear vision now. And as a result of that, so the mind remains calm, quiet. Even though you see things, you are not thinking, you are not fabricating. Even though you hear things, you are not fabricating. So the six senses are very much like in cessation. So there is no grasping now. So mind is able to keep its peacefulness intact, peacefulness unharmed. Very much like the opposite of the previous cycle. Now because the ignorance is abandoned, now you are able to maintain peacefulness. There is no mind-made world. There is no conditioned mental illusory state. Rather, you are in a really mindful state, the present moment. A kind of a present experience is there, you are very well know what's really going on. Mind is not entangled with anything. Your vision is very clear and established in mindfulness. So here the abandonment of the ignorance is highlighted. Okay, with that I like to conclude. By the way, so a few more things. So in this sutta, Dvaitanupassana sutta, so Buddha in a way summarizes Jati marana sansaraṁ yeva janti punappunam itta bhava anyatha bhavam avijjā yeva sāgati. So Buddha mentioned now because of this ignorance one is going again and again in this sansara, going to one birth, next birth, another birth, so ongoing wandering in sansara, and he one time become this and one time become something else. So we can consider this in a kind of more broader way, telling that one time you are a human, another time you are a maybe peta, another time you are a maybe a god, another time again a human, again you are becoming a hell person. So like a kind of wandering is going on. On the other hand, we can take it to another level. Say every time we are jumping to different states, mind made states, you become a seer, you become a listener, you become an observer, or you become a taster, you become a thinker. So every time the senses are very much like conditioning the mind to become someone, jumping from one state to another state. So that is what actually we are developing to a higher level and even go wandering in the sansara. So this is the journey due to ignorance. Avijja eva sagati. There is no person doing it. There is no inherent self doing it. Rather, it is because of the avijja, this whole operation is continuing. This momentum is gathering because of avijja. So we are jumping from this state to the other state, to another state. Avijjahayam maha moho. Yenidang sansitang chirang vijjagata cha ye satta ne nate gacchanti punabhavam. So therefore Buddha mentioned it is because of ignorance, this great delusion, that one has wandered on for so long. But those beings who have gained clear knowledge do not come back to renewed existence, because he understood. So this is a kind of a wandering happened because of ignorance. So once ignorance is not available, so is not going to illusory states, no becoming process. So he is trying to keep the mind peaceful without getting to conditioned states, so that prevent him going to a next state, another birth. Completely cease. Avijja has abandoned. So this is the conclusion of the topic Avijja. And with that I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now, if you have any question, I open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
If you have any, one is, you can unmute and talk. Joseph?
Thank you. Hello. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to report on my practice, because I think it's really... I've been making note of the way it's unfolding very much in line with the discussions we've been having.
Mm-hmm.
So when I do my sitting practice, I find that I can fairly quickly come to a very subtle breath. I then look to see if I have any kind of laziness or fatigue within myself, and if that's not there, I move on. I look to see if I have any doubt within myself. By the way, if I find that I have a lack of energy or a little bit of sleepiness, I take maybe a deep breath, get in some more oxygen. And the next is the doubt. If I find that if I have any doubt, then I just return to the breath. I look for a clearer sign of the in-breath or the out-breath. But if the breath is not available and I'm not feeling any doubt, then I look to see if there's any ill will. If there is any ill will, I look to feel a little more comfortable, and often with that kind of reflection, I maybe have the rapture, the piti, the sense of the vibrations and the sort of release in the body. I then look to see if there's any restlessness. If there is, then I look to just relax the mind and again kind of come to relaxing the body, and that tends to dissolve that. And then I look to see if there's any lust in the mind. And if so, I just look to be more equanimous by letting go, so not grasping. And I find I'm able to do that sometimes, usually say in the morning, first thing, to go fairly smoothly through those five hindrances, and I can check, and then there's a kind of an emptiness. Mm-hmm. And that's my understanding for what we've spoken about. The emptiness is the emptiness of those hindrances. And then I note the vastness of that emptiness, if it's available. Then I notice also that I'm not taking a specific meditation object like the breath, and yet I feel fairly concentrated, fairly centered and mindful. So I consider that the nothingness, like the no object is the nothingness. I can then also maybe see if there's the infinite space available, where there's just a great sense of spaciousness because there's no inner chatter or distraction. I'm not quite sure the understanding of infinite consciousness, what exactly, I don't quite understand that type, that contemplation. I look to see if I can be conscious of all the sensations, the very, very subtle sensations.
No, actually, there
sounds.
Actually,
like
there.
That, maybe.
Yeah, actually, there, Joseph. Now, your consciousness is fairly pervaded. It is not established anywhere. So the very much like you have a very broad, pervaded consciousness, unestablished consciousness.
Okay.
Unestablished consciousness. It is not particularly established on anything, and. Fairly pervaded consciousness.
How would that be different than the nothingness?
Yeah, that's the thing. So, when we are talking from the point of samatha, so this nothingness is something, the samatha nothingness is a conditioned nothingness. So, you are conditioned in the mind telling, okay, there is nothing, there is nothing, there is nothing. So, very much like it's a kind of a conditioned process. Now, here we came through a vipassana process where we understood there is no object as such to grasp. So all are conditioned phenomena. They are not worthy of grasping. So slowly, so we have abandoned or relinquished all those objects. So the mind become quite open, spacious, and nothing is there.
Right.
Because nothing is worthy of grasping.
That's right.
So basically,
right.
The understanding is preventing us from grasping because we understood their futile nature, their the empty nature. So as a result of that, so mind become quite open, pervaded, awareness is there, but there is no entanglement of the mind to anything.
That's right.
Right.
So when I'm in that state, I understand that is the state to nurture. So I don't do anything at
Correct.
That point.
Correct.
And other than notice when I'm getting sucked into something, which happens inevitably, within a short period of time, all of a sudden getting sucked into a thought, or I tend to see if I can label that, or the lust is there, and then sort of let go, and I find that I'm able to fairly let go within a short period. It doesn't seem that I get very much entangled.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wait until I get a feeling. I get a sense of gratitude. A deep sense of gratitude comes over me, and I feel that it's time to bring the practice to a close. So I usually wait until that
Right.
Gratitude feeling sort of emerges.
Correct.
And then I close the practice, and then I notice during my day-to-day activities, I sort of just go about my activities without necessarily having to sort of really bring attention to my breath. I'm just sort of doing fairly well. But if I do find myself in a situation where I'm under pressure or all of a sudden feel stressed, I feel that I can fairly quickly root myself back in the breath or, say, my feet on the ground. And I find that that gives me, once again, within a few seconds, I can sort of quickly feel the emptiness of the hindrances, or the I feel a sort of established in nothingness. And, mm-hmm. and I find that that's really been helpful to handle difficult situations sometimes which come up, which would maybe in the past have thrown me off or shaken me up. I find that I can sort of ground myself fairly well, and it's just been a really I think wonderful development to have this grounding in the nothingness.
Correct.
I think that there's something really really powerful about that. I remember mm-hmm. at one point you had mentioned that it's the Buddha said that it's because it's unperturbable, mm-hmm. because it's not anything.
Correct.
It can't be shaken. And I just think that's just a really just powerful message. And I just wanted to also thank you and reiterate that even though maybe not often saying things, but very much paying attention and putting all of this into practice. So thank you very much.
Yeah, very good. Actually, just continue your practice, Joseph. So we are in the correct path. So as you mentioned as the last point, so that what we call as the atammeta. So we are not making any self out of this anything. And again, we are not making anything out of anything. So we are not allowing the mind to go and grasp anything so that the mind become colored or conditioned. On the other hand, we are not making any self, any person, any individual. And rather the keeping the mind very relaxed, non-self, unattached, unestablished nature. So as much as possible, if we are able to continue this, so we can see that how mind become freed often, and how the mind become free from any stress, any eye making, any mind making, any kind of a conceit. So even the very subtle defilement starts easy to recognize, and we can free the mind from all these even subtle defilements. But anyway, time to time, the collapses can happen if there are kind of very intense kind of situations. It might can disturb the mind because we are not arahants. So we know that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the mind can sometimes get disturbed. So at that time, again, we need to, recognize what's really going on, how I can quickly recover, regain that peacefulness. So kind of an ongoing process that we need to continue. So it's a matter of continuation.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Bhante.
Right.
Everyone's
right. Yeah, then one Sanai.
Renuka, you can unmute and talk. Teruvan Saranai, Bhante.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Bhante, actually, while I was listening to your Dhamma talk, what I felt is, in every moment, every time when we move from one activity or one thought to another, we are walking in this samsara, isn't it, Bhante?
Mm-hmm.
And whenever we sit and meditate, and whenever we come into that peaceful situation, peaceful space, and no clutter, no clinging, it means we, at each point, each time, we are stopping samsara. Mm-hmm. Samsara, isn't it, Bhante?
Yeah, we can say so, like that. Yes, yes.
So I feel that it means that is why you all keep on telling us, be in that space and develop that space, because mm-hmm. at each time we do that, we are stopping our samsara. We are stopping
are you making?
Maybe the rebirth kind of a thing.
Correct, correct.
That is what I felt, you know.
So, and the
I'm not
rebirth,
sure whether I'm
actually,
right.
Yeah.
Kindly, if you can explain that little bit more, Bhante, that would be great.
Yeah, as we already discussed now, that rebirth means that we are not getting to reborn into a new state, mind-made state. Say, for example, you are thinking about something going to happen in the future. Okay, there is a war going to happen in the future. So you can imagine that. Okay, this is the way the conditions are happening. This is how the nations are now getting to conflict. So the things are getting worse. So I am getting to a war. So the world is getting to a war. Now you can start about it, and ultimately we illusory can create such a, you know, a kind of an agitated state of mind, and we can dwell in suffering. So we have born to a new state. We have fabricated that. We have created that because of the incidents and this and that. So we have created that, and now we are sort of experiencing suffering, a mind-made suffering. Maybe if we take another situation, now say you start loving someone. So you start feeling, or you start recognizing, and you start feeling his or her, maybe their presence or their face or their association. And so you even imagine how you are holding his or her hands and you are walking. So now you are in a different state. You have lost the present moment, the clarity of the mind. So mentally you are born to a new state. So again and again, during the day, how often are we creating a new state through the mind? How often are we born to such a new state from the mind? So in the large sense, so this is how we do wandering in the samsara also. Now we are, assume that now we are living in the human realm. So at the death moment, say you want to become someone. So your mind go and grasp another state. So you become that state. So you become a god. You become another human being. So likewise, this ongoing samsaric existence is fairly, we can minimize to this ongoing reborn into new states in the mind, mind-made illusory states in the mind. So that is why if we are able to fairly minimize that, so the mind is very calm, relaxed, and it is experienced in the present moment. So that is why Buddha explained thoroughly, bhava nirodho nibbana. So if we are able to stop that conditioning process, if we are able to stop that becoming process, so we always have that becoming, I want to become that, I want to become this, I want to become someone. So that inherent desire to become. So if we are able to abandon that, then the mind remains calm, you are fully contented. In the present moment, you don't need anything, you don't ask anything. There are no inner demands coming in, there is no inner thirst. Currently quenched, currently peaceful, currently contented. So this is something that Buddha is telling, okay, currently you are peaceful to that extent. So that is the Tadanga Nibbuti. Currently you are peaceful to that extent because you have a thorough understanding. So that thorough understanding prevent you from grasping, prevent you from becoming. Instead, it is making you contented as much as possible in the present moment. No becoming now. So you are not born to new state now. You are not a new person now. New individual, new this, new that, something. Just experiencing is going on.
Bhante, in that case, actually, that is our avidya, is that we think that one person is existing in this world and he's doing, he did this and he is doing this and he is going to do that. So because of that, we collect that three situations into one and think that we are in samsara walking through, or we are now experiencing in this situation and I am this. So that is I felt thinking that I situation all the time, we are binding to these things, isn't it, Bhante? So
exactly.
I think
exactly.
And looking things in a wrong way, you know.
Yes, yes, yes.
That is what I felt, you know.
Yeah.
So I think, so thank you, Bhante. That is a great point I learned today. Thank you very much for
okay.
the kind Dhamma talk. Yeah.
Okay. Teruvan Sarnai.
Thank you. Teruvan Sarnai, Bhante.
Geshan, you can ask your question.
Yes, I just unmute myself. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, yes.
Something what I really enjoy when you gave the explanation of samatha and vipassana, the differentiation of nothingness and something that I have always thought independently, but today you basically painted a fantastic picture. I always realize this kind of things are more logical in nature per se, and you painted a fantastic picture of when we do samatha, we basically sort of talk about you know, we basically instruct our mind of that emptiness or the nothingness, and but on the vipassana side, you basically analyze each individual point, and in that analysis, you realize there is nothing to cling on, and for that matter, you know, why would we want to grasp? So you can nicely draw a sort of a Venn diagram as well, and how this kind of thing sort of from samatha, how it happens, when it from the vipassana side, how it sort of occurs as well. So thank you so much for that explanation. So one of the things that I wanted to discuss today. On my walking meditation, when I try to think of the foot, whether it is the right or the, when I concentrate, whether it is the right or the left, and then the point where it touches, and then how it moves, and I think I have explained this as well, that I can sort of see on one of the, I can see sort of both goes in a parabolic way, but I remember you instruct me just to sort of watch on one, not on the other. So I see all the points where it touches, the moment it touches, say if I'm concentrating on the right, the moment it hits on the very bottom, and then my other foot is the left is up, and I feel that is the highest height that I obtain as well. And I also think about the moment when this is in this through this cycle, it's such a segmented and very fast moving concentrations, I guess. The moment you see that, what when it touches, and now I'm beginning to think, what are the places that does not touches that I don't feel anything as well, and then there are multiple, many that I can think of. So I think it is a challenge. Something which I have learned from Dhammajiva Amdru as well, and I am trying to sort of get to that, but it is absolutely hard to sort of think about it, because the moment I think of one point and I understand logically, the remaining points are sort of disappearing, but when I switch that, okay, apparently then I am clinging into something else, and whereas then now I have completely in that delta T second, you know, like I can't sort of feel that my foot movement or there. So I kind of see that it is a challenge, and I'm kind of in a questioning now for when I try to sort of look for the other things while in the meditation, while in the walking, how to sort of master that, how to sort of, should I be looking into it or should I just not do that as well, because I think that challenge is there for me.
Mm-hmm. So basically, I think now by seeing the conditioned things, which are quite apparent, say when your foot is touching the ground, so basically you feel the hardness. So that's a very apparent thing, and you can see how conditioned it is, how arising and passing away it is. So that develops wisdom in us. So this conditioned phenomena is, you know, subjected to arising and passing away, subjected to impermanence. It is suffering. So I have no control. There are various conditions contributing to its existence. So this is the knowledge that we gain. So this knowledge is the one helping us to release the mind. It is not that we are trying to forcefully release the mind, kind of an immature, forceful release of the mind. Rather, we deal with the conditioned phenomena and we see their true nature thoroughly, directly. And because of that wisdom, so that wisdom is taking care of the release. It is not that I am trying to release. Rather, wisdom takes care of release. Now, that is very beautifully mentioned in the Chetana Karaniya Sutta. So, when we have the true knowledge of things as they truly are, Yatha Bhuta Jnana Dasana. So, the apparent result is the Nibbida and Viraga. So, the disenchantment and the dispassion. Because we have seen things properly. At that moment, okay, the mind is concentrated, we kept it aimed at various phenomena, and they show their true nature, and we observe that thoroughly. So that has given me an insight, that has sort of aroused me an insight, as a result of that insight, now mind has become dispassionate, now mind has become kind of disenchanted because towards that phenomena, because it has seen the true nature, the truth of it. So the abandonment become a very natural thing now. So your mind now may even get further separated from those phenomena, disassociated from those phenomena, and now mind remains calm, quiet, secluded, without getting to those phenomena. Now it may even resist going there. If you are trying to push the mind and forcefully keeping on to the phenomena, so then mind even resists that. You feel stressful when you are doing that. So rather than doing that, now you can keep it in the space. Now you can simply keep the mind in a more spacious, unestablished place. Because the mind has understood the suffering involved with the conditioned phenomena. So I feel that the process is very much, first we need to go through the conditioned phenomena, most apparent phenomena, and that is helpful for the mind to understand their true nature. So once that knowledge is available, that knowledge is responsible taking care of non-grasping, detachment, relinquishment.
Yes, I agree, and I have experienced what you just described as well. Just trying to keep that focus, and so you know, it becomes somewhat like tiresome as well.
Correct.
And if I just observe it at a distance, maybe like the best way that I can describe as an individual seeing in this body while I'm doing the meditation as a third person.
Correct. Uh-huh.
The third person is that person seeing this, and then it is much lighter. But if I try to sort of force it, then it becomes tiresome. So the third person as well, when you sort of instruct, you know, we need to just keep on one point itself, that becomes as what you described, you know, that tiredness. Sort of the frustration sometimes builds up as well. I don't know whether I'm using the right term.
Correct. Yeah, we understand that when the mind associates those conditioned phenomena, it's a kind of a frustration, it's a kind of a suffering. So it's a kind of a kind of a resistance. So that is all right.
And,
yeah.
And that itself sort of brings to that, through that vipassana, that I say, you relinquish in that sense of all these movements and etc. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So, excellent. Thank you so much. Thiruvan Saranai Bhante.
Yeah, Thiruvan Saranai. Nandana, you can ask your question.
Yes, Bhante. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So, couple things that I wanted to talk today, Bhante, actually ask you a question, and also, actually both are questions, actually. The first thing is, in one of the slides, one of the screens that you shared, in explaining the Paticchasamuppada,
right?
There, this link that explained like consciousness arises from formations. So, form, and then there's an arrow, and then it showed a consciousness. Is that correct? In one of the screens that you shared.
Right. Give me a second. Yep. I'll share the screen again.
So, there was a sequence that was explained, Paticchasamuppada.
Yeah. So, depending on... ignorance as the condition.
It says we...
Ignorance as the condition, volitional formations as condition, consciousness. Yeah, volitional formations as condition, consciousness. Correct.
Right. So, my question is actually on that. Because in my practice, I have been trying, at least, you know, in my meditation practice as well as, you know, day-to-day activities, the way I have been trying to experience or to know consciousness, or to know that consciousness is acting or working inside me, is to kind of the moment I become aware of something, like with the senses. For example, say I hear a noise, see a form, sense, you know, smell or whatever the five senses. The moment I become aware that, okay, I am seeing now or I am hearing now, that I kind of, I think, okay, now, so this is, I am experienced, you know, I am inside, you know, in my mind, consciousness is at play right now because I am seeing something, right?
Yeah.
So
actually,
that is how I have been trying to, in my practice, that is how I have been trying to experience or to know consciousness. But this son says, with volitional formations as condition, that is like sanskara as condition, consciousness arises.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, Bhante, how why is that different? I mean, because I kind of, because this is like volitional formations, like sanskara is a much later stage than just becoming aware of something, right?
No, actually the thing is, now the your statement, okay, now we are seeing things, and among what we see things, okay, I have a particular interest into something, and so now I am seeing that. Now say, for example, you have a daughter, and there are many other students. Say you are going to pick your daughter, and there are other students also, and you recognize your daughter, and your mind is now established on your daughter. Oh, this is my daughter. Now, at that moment, the kind of a strong consciousness arises because you did that fabrication. So among many objects, now you have selected, you have particularly differentiated a particular object and you name it as, this is my daughter. So I is created, mine is created, and you have specified a particular conditions so much into that object and you have given so much importance into that object. So that is all our formations, all our mind-made formations. So the all formations are actually prerequisites for your consciousness to thoroughly establish on that particular object. Now there is,
right.
Now
so
for you, there is right. Your daughter. And when daughter is there, you feel presence of you. I am there. So this is my daughter. So your presence as an individual, as a father, and that object's presence as a daughter are all conditioned, all formations. But if you are able to say, simply see things as they are, without, you know, particularly interested of anything, seeing is just seeing. There is no even a thought arising in your mind. You're simply seeing things, okay, mind remains calm, unentangled, not even a thought arisen. And mind's peacefulness, unattached nature is intact. So then you are not making any formations. And the consciousness is not established onto a particular object. It's simply unestablished.
Right. Now I understand the difference. So if I'm to kind of summarize what I heard from you, Bhante.
Right.
Consciousness can arise conditional and volitional formations, or as you know, under the circumstances that I explained earlier, where I see something but I'm not having any particular interest. I mean this happens all the time in our daily life, because we become kind of aware of something which is kind of no interest to us, just mm-hmm. like a chair or a table that's in front of us, but mm-hmm. If I look at it and if I contemplate on it, that this, I am seeing this object,
mm-hmm.
and I am seeing this object, and therefore I know, and I know because I have what is at play is consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I mean, there is no identification or special kind of manasikar, like an interest or attention, special attention or anything like that. It is just a neutral object.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to see whether is it correct. I mean, I practice it like from time to time. I remind myself when I see something, when I see an object, or when I hear something which I'm not interested in actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I remind myself, the consciousness is at play because now I know this is sound.
Mm-hmm.
So, is that, would you say that is a beneficial practice, or is it of no use, or what would be your advice?
Yeah, I mean, when we create something, probably it can even create certain amount of a liking, maybe a disliking, maybe a thought. So because we are interested of something, or we are repelled from something. But if we are simply merely knowing, kind of a, you know, a glancing, so that kind of a clear vision is there. Apart from that, there is no any particular interest. A particular object is interested, so that your mind is talking about it, interested about it. Your mind quickly jumped to it, shifted to that, and start associating that and looking at more features.
Right. Yes, Bhante. Yes, I think that's very clear. Yes, thank you. And I will move on to the next question I have actually real quickly.
Uh-huh.
It is about the other practice that I want to ask you, Bhante, is like Joseph described his practice, experiencing the checking out the hindrances in
mm-hmm.
his mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been, for a long time, I have been doing that practice, mm-hmm. just checking my mind, especially after I attain some kind of concentration in the mind through Kaya Anupassana. I start moving on to my mind, like Chittanupassana, and then checking out all the hindrances one by one, and then come to realize, okay, now the mind is expansive, like very, very vast, like, you know, it is free. It does not have anything inside. It just, so it feels very spacious.
Correct.
The mind is kind of, there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very clear when I become very convinced that mm-hmm. the mind is blank. Now it's empty.
Correct.
Now, I used to always, okay, I experienced that, and I sometimes I move on to the Bhujanga Dhammas, like asking myself, I check in my mind to see whether I have mindfulness and the effort and the Dhamma Vichaya, and then, you know, Piti, Sukha, and the Upeka also.
Mm-hmm.
So I just try to examine those qualities also in the mind for some time, and then I used to, for a long period of time, I used to just, okay, when I get up from the meditation cushion, I just go about my day-to-day life, and then, you know, slowly after a few hours, I find that my mind is nowhere near what I experienced on the cushion.
Mm-hmm.
So now, since recently, I have developed another practice, so I want to ask your advice, Panthi, again, whether it is something that I should, maybe I should ask you whether to give me any more advice if you can offer on this. That is, now when I get up from my cushion, I try to maintain some kind of connection with my breath.
Mm-hmm.
It's I don't know, it's a little difficult to explain also, because sometimes when I'm even listening to the Dhamma talk, I have been trying to feel my breath in mm-hmm. the background.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost like I am experiencing the breath, but not a very sharp concentration on the breath.
Mm-hmm.
But it is like, I know that, okay, my breath is there, and it's my body, I'm aware of my body, and I'm seated. But at the same time, I'm listening to the Dhamma also, and understanding the Dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like both are happening at the same time, but I know that I have heard that it cannot be, because mind can only pay attention to only one thing, I have heard.
Mm-hmm.
But this experience I have now, I have been doing this for some time now. I try to, even when I'm talking with somebody or getting engaged with something, I kind of have that something almost like the background breath or background body
mm-hmm.
is there.
Mm-hmm.
It's there, but so what I found was, it's an interesting thing that I found was that I am now able to engage in the other activity, like, say, listen to Dhamma, or, you know, talking to somebody. I'm able to engage in that activity with a lot of neutral kind of an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there isn't much, you know, formations going in the background. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's always only my breath and my body is in the background,
mm-hmm.
But I am engaged in the work.
Mm-hmm.
I am fully engaged, but I am very neutral also. So I kind of found it was like a very interesting experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
What could you tell me about that practice, Panthi?
Yeah, at the beginning, I mean, now say when we are developing mindfulness at our beginner stage, so that is an essential practice, where sometimes, you know, when we are involved with certain activity, certain work, so we can get absorbed to that work. We are immersed in that work or that particular activity. And that actually causes us to lose mindfulness, because we are fully immersed in that work. So we lose the balance. Even if someone come and talk, we don't know, because we are fully immersed in that activity. So that is also not a balanced way of doing it. So time to time, we have to come out of it, and we know, okay, now I'm sitting, now I'm, you know, breathing. So likewise, time to time, say we need to establish mindfulness back to the present moment, because otherwise we are immersed in a kind of a activity. So that is one thing. And the other thing is, now as you continue your practice, so as we discuss, so mind starts experiencing unattached state. Even though you are, you know, involved in certain activity, so you are fully present about the whole, you know, the environment, the whole surrounding. So kind of a meta awareness is there, even though you are doing a particular activity. Now, say, for example, so you are listening now. So while listening, you may be aware that what's the time and say what else is going on, that you are sitting, everything is there, but particularly an interesting activity is now the listening, paying attention, but all the other things are also parallelly available. So that means your meta awareness is well available. You are not, 100% immersed on something, but rather kind of pleasant awareness is there. So I think we are talking about at different levels or different stages of our practice. So at the beginning, it is quite essential time to time establish mindfulness on the present moment. Otherwise, we get completely distracted, completely immersed on something. Now, as we develop our practice, then we can see, okay, now the activities are available and I can actually work on something, but at the same time, I am fully aware of other things as well. So I feel you are talking on the second stage where you are doing an activity, but at the same time, if you look back, you can see that your body and the, say, breathing is happening in a more neutral way. They are not disturbed. You are in a very peaceful mentality even though you are working. So previously maybe the work might have given you a lot of tension, lot of kind of an agitation, but now not. You are doing, yes, you are involved in certain activity, but in a more balanced manner. So you are not making any kind of a friction out of that work. You are not hating that work. You know this is something I have to do. Okay, I'm doing it peacefully. There is no much friction to the mind. So the breath is naturally, neutrally going on. Your body is neutrally present. There is no any kind of tension developed because of the work. I feel something like that is going on. This is kind of an assumption I have.
Okay. Yeah, because I thought I would continue this because it's much comfortable. It's much more comfortable than what I used to do earlier. Now it's kind of I'm always kind of, it's very easy for me to, even when I sit down, to connect again with my breath, because I have been on it for even during my waking working hours.
But another thing is Nandan, now if you have the full capacity to keep the mind unattached even without the breath, just keep it like that. So say you are doing some work, everything's happening smoothly. At the moment that you trigger your mind and see, oh, what's really going on? Is my body all right? Is my breath all right? So again, you are creating a self. You are making a fabrication. So that makes a jerk. That makes a kind of a, disturbance. Because mind has found its proper balance. It was in a proper balance, smoothly going on. There was no eye making, there was no mind making. But additionally, we attempted to make a special interest to verify something, and that has made an eye. That has made something. So that is a little disturbance can happen, and we need to be careful on that.
Okay. All right, Bhante. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for the explanation, Bhante.
Okay.
Therwan Sannai.
Yeah, Therwan Sannai. So I think we have spent a fair amount of time and we have discussed some good Dhamma. And with all that, we were able to accumulate some merits. So we'll conclude this session by sharing merits with all the celestial beings, all the past relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path Purusha Nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang. Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang. Sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang. Sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bhummatta deva naga mahiddika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanang. Akasattha ca bhummatta deva naga mahiddika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanang. Akasattha ca bhummatta deva naga mahiddika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu mam parang. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.